Hello, listeners. I'm Logan McLean, and this is OJT, On the Job Training. It's a podcast where I, a journalism student, practice my craft by interviewing passionate people about their projects. Jack Vandenbroek is a student at Humber College in Toronto who enrolled in a hands-on program after graduating from university in Halifax. He's studying event management now and taking a music business course this summer. I reached him in Toronto to discuss the transition from university to college, the importance of communal gathering, and the prospect of pursuing a career around music. So you're taking the event management course at Humber College. I wanted to ask you a bit about what kind of got you into that sort of stuff. What was the first concert that you ever went to?
Okay, well, there's two things we have to unpack. I suppose I'll answer your second half question first. The first concert I ever went to was actually the Wiggles when I was like 2 years old. I have no recollection of, but I'm sure it was great. in terms of event management and what kind of got me into that, a lot of it stemmed from, you know, going through university and, you know, studying, you know, all these incredible things like philosophy and anthropology and learning about the ways that people can kind of come together and communicate and share ideas. But at the same time, you know, when we were going through all that, I knew that I didn't want to necessarily pursue academia. You know, I know it's a call for a lot of people, but I just couldn't envision myself, you know, going right into a master's program. So I took some time to consider, okay, like, what are my options? Am I going to try and find work somewhere or, you know, find some way to continue my education? And the more I thought about what I do in my off time, you know, which usually revolves around music in some capacity, I realized that I wanted to find a way to develop those skills, and, you know, develop being able to put on shows and, organize people, into, you know, events, and to pursue that more formally. So I looked around at a couple different colleges, within the GTA, and ultimately I decided on Humber.
When did you know that, like, a master's degree kind of thing wasn't where you wanted to go?
You know, I think it was probably Christmas time, last year. Yeah. I remember I came home, and, you know, some of our mutual friends at the time were considering, you know, what they wanted to do for their masters, and, you know, what their next steps were going to be. And, I realized that I couldn't see myself going down that path. Ultimately, I remember I went online and I just started looking up different college programs. And funny enough, I actually, before I decided to do the event management one, I actually came across their music program. Mm-hmm. You're also going to be enrolled in this summer.
Oh, you're taking that this summer?
Yeah, so ideally, by the end of 2020, I'll actually have two college programs under my belt. I'll have both the event management and music business course all done, and I'll have two different work co-ops.
What do you hope to do with that?
You know, it's funny. I haven't fully, you know, mapped out what I do specifically, but I know, you know, for sure. I want to be in kind of the arts and entertainment space. It'd be amazing, you know, to work with different live acts, you know, potentially be something like a tour manager, you know, helping get different artists on the road. And, you know, especially with the way, you know, where the industry works these days, you know, particularly the music industry, as a lot of people know, it's no longer sustainable for artists to make the majority of their income through, you know, releasing music on the internet, or even, you know, through vinyl and CDs or whatever standard media. The real way these, you know, we're able to generate income and to, you know, make careers out of music is through live touring. And, you know, whether it's doing different tour circuits or performing at different festivals. This, you know, the epicenter, of where change is happening in the industry. So I can totally see myself, hopefully working with, you know, some different artists, maybe at a label, you know, helping organize tours, or on the other side, you know, learning how to organize and coordinate and execute events, still applies kind of across the board, you know, so whether that falls in, you know, different, you know, sectors, like maybe technology or, you know, there's a whole world of like, you know, corporate meetings. You know, those are just other examples that you can do with this kind of degree. But ideally, I'd like to be able to take the skill sets and put them to what I'm passionate about, which is the arts.
So sometime between the Wiggles and Christmas of last year, you must have started going to concerts and participating in that stuff. When did you get into live music as not quite an adult, but I imagine a teenager maybe?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say it really started kicking off actually when I moved to Halifax. You know, as you and I both know, Halifax has a very vibrant very inclusive music scene.
That would be 6 years ago?
Yeah, probably about 6 years ago now. Five, 6 years ago. And I remember, you know, going out to Halifax, and, you know, suddenly, you know, I had friends in programs that I was in that would be performing at different venues around the city, or, you know, different local acts would pop up, and, you know, sometimes they come perform at the student bars. It was very easy to follow them around. You know, it was like, oh, okay, you're playing at the Wardy. Well, if you're going to be at, you know, the Marquee next week, like, of course I'll come by. So I think I really started, you know, trying to become more involved, in that kind of scene while at university. But in terms of, you know, going to concerts, and trying to, you know, study them and trying to really understand, the kind of framework of concerts and where my like addiction to this began. I would say began the summer after my first year. So that would be the summer of 2016. I went and I saw Pearl Jam, with a friend. And I remember, our tickets weren't even together. He got them like through his aunt and uncle or something, and they came as well, but we were all sitting in different areas. So it was the first time I'd been to a concert where I was sitting all by myself, you know, with all these total strangers. But I remember just being utterly blown away, by Pearl Jam. Like, they're obviously an incredible band. But it was the first time for me, you know, going to a concert ostensibly by myself, and seeing, you know, all this crowd connect with each other and just totally be, you know, enveloped by the music and suddenly make these incredible connections with each other. You know, like, I would have conversations with the people next to me, people I'd never met, you know, who'd been longtime Pearl Jam fans. And between, you know, their songs, you know, they would explain, you know, why, you know, this that was just played was so important to them, or, you know, how incredible this experience was. And I realized, you know, the opportunities that concerts provide people to really kind of, you know, open up a side of the self that you typically don't get a chance to see in, you know, our everyday life. So I think it was that concert that, that really got me hooked. And, you know, since then there's been a whole gauntlet of crazy ass shows. You know, I can list them off if you want, but I don't know if people on this podcast really just want to hear about the concerts I've been to.
I do want to talk about a couple of specific ones, but that brought up, something I'm very interested in. What sort of like social and cultural role do you think live performance plays, and even spiritual? You take that as one big chunk or kind of break it out into pieces if you want. I know it's a big topic, but.
Yeah, no, of course. No, I think it's, it'll be a lot of fun to unpack this. So I think let's talk about the social aspect first. You know, so much of live music, and really just, you know, events as a whole, right? It's always an excuse to bring people together in some kind of shared experience. You know, honestly, to build some kind of community framework.
what I think differentiates live music and what makes it particularly effective at this is it's doing so through the medium of, you know, live performance. You know, there's the element of whatever kind of music you're listening to. You know, there's always kind of this, there's a vulnerability, honestly, in music, you know, whether it's vocal, whether it's instrumental, whether it's a DJ, you know, seeing someone up there performing something they've created is always, it's kind of terrifying. but it's also a spectacle for us, right? It's a way to, you know, see people performing something they've created. But more importantly, when we're all familiar with what they've listened to, or even when we're not, it's in that shared experience of seeing this music being played and like this noise being heard that we're able to connect with it on a level beyond just regular dialogue with ourselves or with other people. And we're able to create a different kind of connection with others. You know, so let's say we're listening to an artist and they're talking about something like depression. You know, the person standing next to me in the audience, we may see the world from very different standpoints. We may be at complete opposite ends of an ideological spectrum, but we'll both be able to listen to this music. We both made the choice to be there. And this music can form a connective tissue between the two of us. You know, everyone's experienced feeling sad before, you know, and to hear another person, you know, communicate through music about how they feel it, it opens you up to a more empathetic outlook on life and honestly, a more empathetic outlook upon ourselves. You know, it's very easy to, you know, to be kind of hardened and jaded in the world we live in. And music has this incredible way of opening us up, to how we really feel and what we're going on through and through our lives. And when we go and experience live music, it kind of opens us up to others as a way to kind of create community. So I think that really encapsulates the social aspect of why live music is important.
Can you give me an example of when you've had that kind of bond with somebody at a concert or just maybe saw someone with a t-shirt or something like that? I've had a lot of those moments.
Yeah. Well, I'll use the Pearl Jam concert as one example. And I have another one as well. But Pearl Jam was really interesting because, you know, again, this is a rock band that's been around, you know, since the 90s. You know, people have had the chance to grow up with it, but then also share that, you know, with their kids. And I remember being at that concert and next to me was, you know, like two total strangers, never met in my life. But one of them had his kid with him. And I remember between some of the songs, he would talk to his kid about, you know, why some of those songs were so important, you know, or where he was at in his life when he was the same age as his son, you know, and I'm standing there and, you know, of course we all kind of get talking because, you know, we all love this shared, experience. In sense of Pearl Jam, you know, and I got to learn a little bit about this person's life, you know, and what they went through, and you know, we were able to kind of have this bond over, you know, both being teenagers and, you know, all the different emotions that we were going through at the time, and using this music as an outlet to, you know, express that frustration, and kind of the angst of being a teenager. But another great example that I think is probably even more effective was earlier this summer, I had the privilege of going to see Carlos Santana.
Awesome.
And it was honestly one of the most incredible shows I've ever been lucky enough to see. But what's so incredible about his music, besides the fact that he's a phenomenal first-class guitar player, is you get to see a whole range of different people that would come out for a Santana concert. You know, there were people, you know, I would argue as old as like 80 you know, sitting on the lawn of Budweiser stage with me, there were entire families, you know, with small babies. you know, everyone's setting out on picnic blankets. People speaking all different languages. You know, there was a lot of people speaking Spanish. There were like, you know, there was a Pakistani family near me. You know, like people from all over were able to connect with, you know, this kind of legacy artist. And when the music really got going, you know, when the songs that, you know, everyone knows were on, everyone was up dancing, they were singing, they were passing drinks around. You know, I had, you know, a family who I'd never met before, you know, who started, you know, talking to me in Spanish, a language I don't speak, but they had me come over. They were, you know, sharing their drinks with me, you know, just they, everyone wanted everyone around them to share in the joy and, you know, kind of the happiness that this kind of music and this kind of experience brings. And I honestly, I can't think of any other context where you'd be able to have an almost instantaneous connection with other people like that. And I think it really, in a cultural sense, artists from different backgrounds, from different parts of the world, talking about different issues or different themes that are relevant to both the cultural context they're from, but can also be reapplied, you know, to the world at large. It's this kind of thing that really creates the cultural fabric of live music, you know, and I think it's why things like music festivals are so important, because it gives us access to a super wide range of different genres and different styles of music that we can find connections to that we never even would have thought we could have in the first place. So that's kind of the social and cultural aspect. I can also talk about the spiritual aspect if you want. Yeah. So the spiritual aspect, I think, is very important, but I also understand, you know, for, you know, it may not apply for everyone. Mm-hmm. Different people have different outlooks on this aspect for sure. But I think for me, the spiritual aspect kind of stems, from my love of blues music. What I think makes blues music unique, and why I kind of see the spiritual aspect in it, is twofold. A, blues music stems from the religious traditions of, you know, West Africa, and then kind of moved into the massive diaspora of the slave trade, to both, you know, Haiti, and the southern United States, and went through various transformations, where it was combined with both the religious traditions, you know, of Haiti and like voodoo and Catholicism, and then in the States with the advent of, like, you know, American Protestantism, and the introduction of like spirituals and gospel music. You know, so there's been this religious aspect to this particular kind of music for as long as it's existed. You know, and there's this notion of being able to connect with something, you know, higher, something greater, that, you know, certainly exists within blues music, but I don't think is exclusive to it. I think you can see that, you know, in elements of contemporary hip hop these days. I think you can see it in rock music. I think it exists in metal. You know, so much of it comes from the performance itself, you know, and the artist, you know, reaching a point where, you know, as they're performing their art, they're able to kind of transcend, you know, they hit the flow state in a sense. You know, that's not exclusive to just live music. You know, that happens in sports and, you know, in a really any person who's kind of at the peak of their performance doing something can hit this flow state. But I think music is a kind of special avenue to that flow state, because I believe there's something in live performance than just the performance itself. I really think that, you know, we're connecting with something that, you know, transcends our everyday, and hits humans on a deeply fundamental level. You know, so even if someone isn't particularly religious or spiritual, if you're seeing, you know, a performer, you know, we can talk about, you know, maybe like Whitney Houston, for example.
Okay.
You know, an immensely talented and technically proficient performer, but, you know, someone who has a ton of soul, you know, you're able to see her, you know, perform songs, you know, with a vocal range that blows people's minds. And even though it is very technically difficult, I think there's definitely an argument to be made that her vocal abilities, while she's executing them, are hitting something more than just those technical vocal levels. I think, you know, she's connecting with something greater. And I think that's why so many people, you know, loved her and like worshipped her abilities for so long, you know, and it's why she's still a very significant cultural force, just as an example anyway.
Yeah. You wrote about that sort of stuff in your honors thesis at King's, right?
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was last year during the process when you realized that you would be more interested in the live side of it than the writing about side of it, I guess, eh?
Absolutely. You know, if we can dive into a small theoretical tangent.
Always.
Yeah. Everything I've just talked about, you know, this, the kind of connectivity that we experience with others within the context of live music on the social, the cultural, and the spiritual level, can actually be defined. And the, you know, theoretical term within anthropology that I used in my thesis is the term communitas. You know, community is built right into the word, right? But it's this notion of communitas, you know, this being this ability to connect with others, you know, to kind of separate yourself from the everyday and have these transcendent moments where we're able to just reach out to one another through live music is really what I think that, you know, in the world as it is, you know, in times where we seem so divided, it's how we can reconnect with one another. And I think there's something immensely hopeful about that, you know, kind of like what I was saying before. It doesn't matter where we come from, who we are, you know, even the kinds of music. I think when we have the chance to go into these spaces, you know, and see something that allows us to connect with others and to feel beyond ourselves, lays the groundwork for a far more understanding, a far more empathetic, and a far more tolerant society. I think live music is the key to that.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Not a problem. Happy to do it, man.
I've been ending each episode of OJT with a segment called The Progress Report. It's a chance for me to pull back some of the professionalism curtain and show listeners just what goes into making a podcast. The Progress Report today ties into my conversation with Jack. Promotion and marketing have been a much bigger part of the launch than I'd expected. While the show is in part about my own progress and process, I've tried to make it sound as professional as I can, and that takes a lot more than just good mics and some editing tricks. One essential thing is consistency around release dates and times. Though my audience is still small, I believe I owe it to you to deliver at 6 a.m. every second Sunday. On the note of obligation, though, I also believe listeners deserve the best quality I can produce. So, the first few weeks of the launch have been about trying to strike a balance between consistency, quality, and quantity. Another key factor in this balance is promotion. I've never used social media for a project or business or anything, so that's all been new. Writing copy or content is intimidating, but I find it helps to design templates and some kind of system. I'm still figuring out just what that system is, though. The intro and sign-off segments are pretty much a mold at this point, but the progress report demands more spontaneity and perhaps less polish. Finally, I've tried to spend some time each day messaging and emailing people and posting on different platforms, sometimes hours a day, sometimes just a few minutes. I've seen surprising success with some written stories getting hundreds of views, actually, when other people shared on Facebook. And I've also had some frustrating and boring hours of writing the same thing over and over with slight variations to appear authentic. No form letters here, folks. Don't even get me started on how many emails and accounts I have now, or how much time I've spent proving that I'm not a robot. And that's it for episode 4 of OJT. You can follow Jack Vandenbroek on Instagram at JacquesStar97. That's star with two R's. You can follow his band, Discontinuity, on Instagram at dis.continuity, and their Facebook page is just Discontinuity. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at OJT_podcast and on Twitter at OJTpodcast. The Facebook page is OJT, On the Job Training. You can follow me on Instagram at logan.mclean.75 and on Twitter at loganmclean94. Finally, listeners, please check out my website, ojtpod.ca, for more pictures and content from Jack and Discontinuity, along with my written stories and photography, and pages on other past guests and episodes. The podcast is available there and on all major streaming platforms. Please rate and subscribe and leave a review. Everything helps when getting a podcast off the ground, and if you like this show and want more interesting guests, listener feedback is the best way to help me make that happen. This has been OJT, On the Job Training. I'm Logan McLean. Thank you for listening.